To some, being a hero is wearing a funny mask or pulling your underpants over your trousers. But there is a better way. By going sober this October for Macmillan Cancer Support, you'll be transformed into a sober hero, proudly saying no to the booze and yes to raising money for people with cancer. Let's join together. You, me, my next door neighbour Jeff, all sober heroes and no silly underpants, except maybe Jeff. Feel heroic for 31 days. Sign up today at gosober.org.uk.
Welcome back here on the Boxing Spotlight. This is your host, Dave Duenas, and I want to thank everybody that's tuned in on Leaving the Ring Network that are loyal on Mondays to listen to Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya on the next round, and loyal on Wednesday to listen to me, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Now, the Boxing Spotlight is a one-man show. It's a show that I do alone here. So my thoughts and my opinions are of my own. So don't judge anybody else about what I, you know, what I say or what I, you know. Don't judge anybody else about what I say or my rants. If you have any complaints, you could send them to Gabriel_Montoya on his Twitter handler. Right? Okay, so that's the complaint box. Send it over there if you want to complain about anything that I'm saying here. Now, if you have small children, send them to the next room. We're going to do some serious boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring. So there's going to be some F-bombs dropped here and there. There's going to be some crazy rants, et cetera. And we're going to go inside the gloves to look at something a bit closer in the sport. Now remember, these are my opinions. So it's not necessarily set in stone. If I upset you by anything about that I say about your fighter or the sport, again, send your complaints to @Gabriel_Montoya on his Twitter handler. Let him deal with it, okay? Let's not forget, he's sometimes forgets to send me the link for me to come on the Leaving the Ring show. All right, let's get to it really quick. Okay. This past Saturday, Billy Joe Saunders from the UK with 25 wins and 12 KOs faced the American Willie Monroe Jr., 21 wins and 2 losses now, out of the U.S., for the WBO middleweight title. Billy Joe Saunders' alias is superb. Well, the only time that I thought that he looked superb was when he fought Andy Lee, and that was a while back. And ever since then, he's really kind of declined. He's been more superb in arguing with people on Twitter, arguing with folks on Twitter, telling fighters that they're bums and, you know, I'll do this to you, calling out Triple G, calling out Chris Eubanks Jr., calling out everybody that comes across him or comes across his Twitter line, Twitter time. So that's by far what he's superb at. He wasn't that superb against Willie Monroe. I mean, he got the win, but what, boy, was it a bore fest. But that's not really what I wanted to talk about. What I wanted to talk about was his son. Now, I know some folks will be like, well, he's a kid and he's this and that and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You got to give him a bypass. Guys, this is crazy because the way the guy behaves on Twitter is the way he parents his kid. Or kids. I don't know how many kids he has. Right now, what I saw was one. I heard two at the, after the weigh-in. But let me go back a bit. Let me explain to you why I'm talking about his son. Okay. And in no way I want to disrespect this kid and stuff. But I mean, I think he disrespected him already by the way he's parent the kid. So they had their weigh-in. Willie Monroe got off. I mean, his dad got on the scale. Right after he got off, the kid wanted to get on the weighing scale for whatever reason. Like he just saw a weight scale for the very first time. He wanted to get on there. And, you know, and everybody was being nice. The promoters and the corner man, they were all being nice to let the kid get on there. Willie Monroe Jr. saw the kid, you know, ran his fingers through the little boy's hair. Okay. Now, granted, I know there are certain kids that don't like that. I've actually have a friend that I went down to his house to go check something out plumbing wise to help him out. And I tapped the kid in the head and he freaked out. I even have a little cousin one time that I tapped him on the head and he freaked out. There are some kids that don't like to be touched on the head. They don't like their hair being touched, okay? I get it. But they didn't, you know, attack me. They didn't try to hit me in the, you know, in my nuts. They didn't want to, you know, the willy. They didn't try to do any of that. So Willie Monroe wasn't the wrong of touching the kid on the top of the head. He was being nice, okay? And, you know, when you like a kid and you think it's cute, I think that's most folks' reaction is like, hey, how you doing there, little buddy? But the reaction that the kid gave him was very surprising. He immediately turned around, and this kid had an awfully evil, like, omen, 1980 omen kid smile on his face. Turns around and throws a straight right to Willie Monroe Jr.'s nuts. Good thing that the kid hits just like his dad. There's not a lot of power behind it, or else there would have been an issue. The fight wouldn't have him proceeded, right? But when they're trying to pull the kid away from him, he decides to kick Willie Monroe Jr. So now you know that, you know what, it wasn't just a reaction because, you know, it doesn't like being patted on the head. This kid is just he's a baby's kid, you know? He's a brat. That's just the only way that I could put it. Willie Monroe just laughed it off, but his team was, you know, really visibly upset. They were pissed, you know? And they looked at the cornermen. They looked at Billy Joe Saunders, his promoter, and they were like, this is bullshit. That's bullshit. Shouldn't have happened. Control your kid. Now, BJ, he blew it off. See what I did there? He blew it off. Just sat there and he flexed his muscles and he posed for the cameras. Didn't say anything. Now, he went off and he boxed Willie Monroe Jr. And he got the win. And it was a boar fest. It wasn't very exciting. Nothing to really kind of mention. It's almost one of those guys that he's one of those fighters that you just want to watch him finally get in with somebody that's going to shut him up. He's a Paulo Malignaggi. Let me put it that way. At least, but Pauly was a little bit better, more classier in some ways, I guess you could say. And he did fight. BJ, just, I don't know, man. That's another subject. But when he went off and he got the win over Willie Monroe, okay. Now, after the fight, he's making his speech. He's doing his post-interview. And he asks his son to apologize for punching Willie Monroe. In an inappropriate place, right? And the kid says, with a smile, again, the omen look, the devil child here, sorry for punching you in the nuts. Now, it's funny at the moment, but at the same time, you go back and you look at that weigh-in. When they pulled the kid away, there was another kid there too that was off camera, but he said F you to Willie Monroe. And the other kid said the same thing. That's not very superb of Billy Joe Saunders as a parent. Good thing the kid didn't grow up in a Mexican or a black family, because that wouldn't really fly or fly with anybody. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of UK fans and even parents out there that were their mouths dropped with the reaction of the kid throwing a punch. But even more after hearing him say F you to Team Monroe. That's crazy. It's unexcusable, but it also makes me now want to see BJ Saunders get in there with somebody that can put some real hurt. Maybe put some sense in this guy. I don't think the Triple G fight's going to happen because, like we said on Leaving the Ring, and my co-host said, do you see Gennady Golovkin go to the UK? I don't think so. I mean, maybe he will for the money, if the money is right. But seeing that he just came off of a bad decision getting a draw with Canelo Alvarez, I think it'd be a bit hesitant. But like I said, money talks. BJ Saunders, is he brave enough to leave the UK, to leave his comfort zone, to come and fight Triple G at Madison Square Garden? It's yet to be seen. Because he doesn't seem to follow through after he calls somebody out on Twitter if he's going to want to fight the guy. You know, like I said, he's more epic on Twitter than he has been in the ring. His son is more epic than the guy. His son is more brave than him. If you look at that, maybe that's where BJ Saunders' nuts went. It was right there with his seed. Anyways, let's move on. Andre Ward, the light heavyweight unified champion of the world, with wins of 32 wins and 16 KOs, has announced his retirement today on September 21st of 2017. Is it a big shocker? I think semi, you know, because he had been flirting with it. After his controversial win over Sergey Kovalev, he kind of mentioned that he wanted to retire. But even though I thought that he was just playing a little bit of the Floyd Mayweather mind games, trying to get underneath the skin of Kovalev so that he would derail from any game plan that he had mapped out to try to beat Andre Ward in the rematch. Now, as soon as we saw it, a lot of folks saw it. A lot of folks were like, hey, well, good riddance, goodbye. But then you had some folks that were just really just kind of brown-nosing Andre Ward. And the majority of the people that I saw that were brown, I'm from the Bay Area, first off, okay? But, you know, the one thing about me, and the one thing you can't say about me is I've never been a kind of guy, even though, like I was a big fan of Tim Bradley. But I knew his flaws, and I knew some of the fights that I could predict against him because he didn't perfect some of the bad habits that he brought in the ring, right? With Andre Ward, you see people go like, oh, I'm so glad I witnessed the greatest fighter, one of the greatest, I'm sorry, let me, because I don't want to misquote anybody, one of the greatest fighters that I've ever seen. Guys, I know he's from the Bay, but we don't need to do that. One of the greatest fighters that we've ever seen? Are you serious? I mean, I watched him in the Olympics. You know, I thought he was okay. I wasn't very impressed by him. I saw him live at the Shark Tank in San Jose, and he was not a headliner yet. Then when he became a headliner, I remember most people in there would ask him, so you're here to watch Andre Ward, the Olympian. There was, I mean, 9 out of 10 people were in there going like, who? Andre, no, I just came to the fights because finally the fights were here in San Jose at the HB Pavilion. So let's have a closer look inside the gloves on Andre Ward's career to determine, was he a great fighter? Definitely a Hall of Famer. But what fight stands out that you would repeatedly go watch again to justify the fact that he's being called a great fighter? Is he a first ballot Hall of Famer? Absolutely. But here's the question. How many of you went back? Not looking at the Kovalev the first match, okay? Because a lot of us had to go back and watch it again because it was so close. And the boxing community was really divided. So divided. I mean, think about this. The first fight that happened on November 19, 2016. Ward won on the scorecards. He had 114-113 with Burt Clemens, 114-113 with Glenn Trowbridge, 114-113 with Glenn McKee. It was a close fight, but however, many media and fans saw it different. Most media and fans, and like myself, saw Kovalev win that fight. So that's the only fight that I can think of, honestly, where I went back and watched it more than 2 times. Name another fight that Andre Ward has been in. We had to watch it numerous times that didn't involve Sergey Kovalev. Not really much. Very first real recognizable name that Andre Ward faced was against Edson Miranda. And that was in 2009 to defend his WBO title. But Miranda was a middleweight who had been KO'd prior to facing Andre Ward against Cali Pavlik. For the middleweight, for the chance to go against Jermaine Taylor, the undisputed middleweight champion at the time. Then after that, in a rematch, he ends up getting knocked down in the fourth round by Arthur Abraham. So moving on forward from there, he enrolled himself into the Super 6 tournament that was on Showtime and under the Goose and Tudor banner, which was his promoter at the time. In 2009... he ended up beating Mikael Kessler, who Mikael Kessler at the time was the favorite to win the Super 6 tournament. So it was a big surprise to see how much he matured, because in 2005 in November, he was dropped by Darnell Boone. at the Rose Garden in Portland, Oregon. So that's why when his first recognizable name was Edison Miranda. But like I said, this is a guy that moved up from middleweight, had been stopped twice, goes in 168 division, and Ward shut him down. So he wasn't a proven factor yet. He gets in with Miguel Kesser, which I covered. Okay, I was there live. I covered the whole event. And he did a phenomenal job. But is it a fight that you would go back and watch again because it's so memorable? Then after that, he beats this fight decisively against Alan Green. Then Psycho Bika. Then he gets in with Arthur Abraham. Then he wins the WBA and WBC super middleweight title against Carl Froch. But I go back again. Are those fights you would go back and say they're very memorable? Would you watch them again? He opted not to face Usain Bute. Didn't want to go to Canada, remember? And in all the fights that happened with the Super Six, none of them were out of the state. The majority of the ones right now that I just mentioned off, Kessler, Green, and Bika, were in Oakland. So he's never really had a kind of venture off to show that he wanted to be great at that time. And Usain Bute was calling him out. And that was really honestly the biggest fight at the moment at 168 because Usain Bute was undefeated. But who opted to take the assignment was Carl Froch. And Carl Froch was able to expose that Bute was ready to go. Instead, what happened was at 168, Andre Berto decided to call Chad Dawson, who was a 175-pounder. Okay, and hadn't fought. This was back in 2012 when Andre Ward called them out. Well, they called each other out. They wanted to fight, and the fight happened in 2012. Well, Chad Dawson had to come down to 168, which he hadn't fought in 2005, and that was against Ian Gardner. So that's 7 years difference there. And I remember John Scully, the Iceman, coming on saying they're in, you know, great camp, great condition, and that's not a problem. But after loss, comes back on the show, leaving the ring with myself, Gary Montoya, and he says, what did you want me to say? We had a shitty camp that he really couldn't make the weight, that it drained him. What did you want me to say? I couldn't say the things that were really going on in the camp. You didn't need to. We saw it. We knew it. It's history repeat. History repeating itself. A guy going up in weight and trying to cut back, which he hasn't visited in so long, is always bound to lose. It's against him. If you have a good fighter with talent, and then you have a weight issue that you really don't need to go to anymore, because now you become comfortable at a light heavyweight division, 175, you don't go back down. But I understand why they did it. Money talks, right? And then the only other fight you could really think about is in 2006 with the fight with Sullivan Barrera, who's now making his mark in boxing. He beat Shcherbinsky and he beat Joe Smith. But other than that, there's nothing there that's so memorable. There's nothing there to say that he's great. The only thing that you can say that is there, he unified 168. He was the reigning champion. But to call him great, no. To say he's a Hall of Famer, absolutely. That's my only problem that I saw with people that I saw them say. And I had folks say, I heard you say he's not great. He's good. I think there was a lot left still on the table with this retirement, which I don't believe, guys. I got to tell you, I don't believe this. I don't believe he's going to follow through with a retirement. Why? Because here's a guy that I've covered for a very long time and had some very long conversations with him and his head trainer, Virgil Hunter. And one thing they keep saying, that Andre Ward keeps saying to me was, one of my idols is Floyd Mayweather. I want to be like Floyd. I want to have the career. I want to retire. I want to have an undefeated record and retire undefeated. And he mimicked Floyd Mayweather when it came to playing head games with his opponents. He ended up mastering the way Floyd would toy with his opponents. Example, waited for Kovala in the first match. You saw, like I said, the surprise look in that first fight, okay? With the, you know, he had a unanimous decision. But even his look, when they were announcing it, you could tell that he wasn't for sure if he got it. Then when he got it, his eyes just, you know, exploded. his you know, his body language told you, like, oh shit, I won. Oh my God, I did it. But there was doubt. As much as he said there wasn't, there was doubt. And so what he did is he toyed with Kovalev's head. You know, he said, he said, I'm going to retire. I'm not sure if the money's got to be right. He didn't show up to the HBO standoff to face Kovalev to answer the questions that HBO had for him. He did a lot of tricks in the bag. The bad part about it, that he did get in the head of Sergey Kovalev, who is a bit arrogant, who didn't make any adjustments, who didn't listen to his corner, who went in the fight with referee Tony Weeks, where a lot of folks believe that he did a terrible job in the rematch that happened in 2017, June 17. And even though Kovalev was stopped, he was only up on one card, and that was Steve Weinfeld. He had it 65-66 for Kovalev. The other two guys had it, you know, Glenn Fieldman and Dave Moretti had it 67-66 for Andre Ward. But the argument there from fans was that Tony Weeks did a terrible job at not warning Andre Ward. And Kovalev screwed up, in my opinion, but not taking matters in his own hand and looking at the ref. And basically, Tony Weeks took it as an insult when he's telling him, when Kovalev's telling him how to do his goddamn job. So Tony Weeks became emotional, ignored the fact that Andre Ward was landing low. Now, if Kovalev would have decided to do what a lot of other fighters have done, I mean, think about it. When Tito Trinidad was hitting Fernando Vargas low, what did Fernando Vargas do? He hit low back. Plenty of professional fighters have taken it within themselves and said, you know what? I'm going to just answer them what they're giving me until the ref jumps in and recognizes that we're both doing fouls here. Kovalev should have done that. And that would have made Ward then now understand he had to bring his punches up more. But that didn't happen. So that left a lot of bad taste on a lot of folks. Now, I know there's some people saying, hey, I don't want to see a third one. I had enough. But there are a large majority of other people that think that give Kovalev a chance and redeeming himself, building his mind frame, getting himself back into the ring, maybe learn from this lesson. I don't know if he had. He's getting Shcherbinsky soon. Should help his build his confidence and see exactly where he's at. And that thing to me right there would tell us, did he adjust? Did he understand? Is this a guy that plateaued in his camp? Then we move forward from there. So has Andre Ward done everything he can in the division? Maybe so, but I also believe that he retired to sit back to let the young guns out there at the 175 and even the cruiserweight to dish it out and leave himself a big name. I mean, look right now, the Super Series that Dick Schaefer is putting out. The winner of that guy maybe end up sparking enough interest where Andre Ward can ask for the money he's asking for to make a comeback. HBO said that they were in negotiations for a multi-deal and he walked away. Maybe they were trying to lock him down on a certain amount of fights where he doesn't really want a certain amount of fights. He wants maybe one or two, but for a big chunk of money. So what do? You say, I'm going to retire. Make the demand for the network to say, I want them back. Because it seemed, as what I've read and heard, that HBO wanted him to stay. So isn't that kind of a Floyd Mayweather move? That's why I said I don't truly believe he's retiring. I still think there's things there that there's still business there that he's got to do. And I think that with the note of their fans, they're going to still question that controversial win, the low blows, is what he's going to be remembered beating Sergey Kovalev is still going to sting his ego. Now, he did state that if he doesn't feel it in him anymore, if he just can't seem to, you know, get up for the fights anymore, it's not fair to his family, it's not fair to his fans, it's not fair to himself. Absolutely, because it becomes more of a risk out there if you're not truly 100% to 110%, right? Absolutely. But I also think that the incentive is money. Like I said, multi-fight deal, meaning that he's got to fight more than he might suggest for himself and his body, and his body can't take it, like he mentioned. There could be a lot of truth. And if there's a lot of truth that his body's not responding, well, shit, I wouldn't want to go out there and fight for pennies either. Especially if I'm getting used to the 5 million bracket. I want to be paid what I think is owed to me if I'm risking my body and my health. So what do you opt to do? Floyd Mayweather did in a lot of ways a business move that was not agreeable with fight fans, because we want to see fights. But he opted to retire with Miguel Cotto, Margarito, Clary, Shane Mosley, and a lot of these other guys in the welterweight division. Paul Williams. They were coming up. This was an exception of Mosley, but this was the talent pool that was out there that he was going to have to swim with. He decided to retire, and he came back after everybody fought each other. And then there was a name out there that drew in the bigger numbers. Ricky Hatton. First was Juanma Marquez. Ward may do that. There may be a name out there, we don't know yet, that can draw them back in if the money is there to be made. I hate when folks say, well, there's nobody out there, it's done. Give it 2 years. Trust me. In 2 years, there's a lot that can be done and made. And at, 33? I believe he's, 33, 3 years old? He's still young. Hasn't been in a lot of wear and tear. Hasn't been in wars. I mean, his toughest two fights were against Sergey Kovalev. So, just what I stated, does it make him a Hall of Famer? Absolutely. Does it make him a great fighter? I'm not really sure. It's going to be argumental. I think there's going to be some folks that are going to argue, because like I said, what fight did you go back and say, I want to watch this again? It had no controversial outcome. If you look at the greats, there are fights there that you could that have been witnessed where you go back and watch it repeatedly because it was a great fight. Anyways, you can leave your thoughts and your questions or whatever you want on theleavingthering@gmail.com. Again, thank you for tuning in to the Boxing Spotlight. And as always, if you could contribute to our Patreon to continue our independent journalism here on the show, we'll be much appreciated. I'm your host, Dave Duenas. Again, this is another show for the Boxing Spotlight.
Your new 100% committed to Walthamstow Co-op store is now open on Black Horse Lane. We're 100% committed to British meat. From our pork pies to our chilled lasagna, we only use fresh British meat. It's our way of supporting British farming communities, because we think that's a better way of doing business. Your new co-op, now open in Walthamstow, refers to co-op-owned brand fresh meat products, subject to availability.